here it is. Your moment of zen for Saturday morning. Just let that sink in.
Wow.
That boy, he really loves you. Don't do him wrong.
Don't do him wrong.
Such a great tune.
Who is this?
This is the Lost Generation. The Sly. The Slick. And the Wicked. Ooh. Is the tune.
Wow.
Gets all trippy there.
Yeah. Produced by Alan Parsons.
I love these old Brunswick labels. Middle 70s. Or early.
I cannot stop listening to this Anderson .Paak and Bruno Mars' new track. I don't know if you've listened to it.
No.
They're calling themselves Silk Sonic. I have nothing against any. I don't care. If the music sounds good, I want to listen to it. And this sounds straight out of the 70s. It's got a little bit of that sort of, you know, Bruno Mars's voice is very much like 90s R&B. Just, I love that. Because like that's what I grew up listening to. Hey, Rocco, can you do me a favor and try to enjoy scratching yourself a little less?
There's a little gremlin under the table.
Yeah, he's like, oh my God, this is so good. But they released this one song, which is just fantastic. It's got a little call and response, which is beautiful. And then they released, I think yesterday or a couple days ago, the intro to the album, which has got Bootsy on it. And it's great. He's like, hey,
it's Bootsy, baby.
It's Bootsy, baby. And he's like, this is a group I'm calling Silk Sonic. And it's like, oh, man, it's just Bootsy's involved. I'm excited.
I think the first time I ever heard Uptown Funk, I thought somebody was playing a joke.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
Is this?
Yeah. For you guys don't know, there's a small pug that's just torturing himself right now. Yeah, self-flagellation right now. Take it easy, buddy.
Welcome to Racks and Stacks podcast this morning.
Yeah.
I'm Gabe Bisa.
I'm Aaron Oster.
That's Rocco the dog under the table.
Yep.
Making noise.
You've probably heard him. If you've been listening to any of these episodes, he plays a pretty key role.
Yeah.
And there it is again.
Interrupting, causing noises, whatever.
Don't feed him after midnight, folks. Yep. Yeah, dude. So nice. Another beautiful week. Finished. There was like some real spring weather, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, and then a kick in the pants with the snow and ice and cold again.
No, merely just a little bit of heavenly dandruff. Nothing. Nothing serious.
I'm taking partial blame for that because I said, yeah, I'm just waiting for the last snow. And sure enough, a couple days later.
There you go. Yeah. I actually had some friends who were trying to get up to Vermont and trying to see if they could get one more day of skiing or snowboarding in the mix. But I think most of it's gone, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
I don't think the lifts are open anymore. We had a pretty incredible season as far as like snowboarding is concerned.
Yeah, there was just enough snow, but not too much snow, and then
I'm just so excited to be back in summertime. I just love being outdoors, man. Short sleeves and, like, doing stuff. Riding my bicycle, riding my motorcycle, hiking, you know? Just all the wonderful things, man.
I'm just thankful to sit around a campfire.
Yes.
Which I do that all year round, but I am thankful for not 70 layers.
Yeah. This is true. We had a couple of cool campfires this winter, too. Even, what was it, Halloween over at our buddy's place?
Yes.
That was like,
it was like 3 feet of snow, but then also like standing next to the fire is pretty rad, man.
I've never DJed in that temperature before, but yeah. it was actually pretty good.
Yeah, it was a little bit reminiscent of like Batman and Robin with Mr. Freeze. Cool party.
An emphasis on the cool.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. That's what I meant.
What I can say is that the goat that you cooked was on point.
That was a lot of fun, man.
If you've never had goat before, you really need to have some goat.
There's a group, shout out, Heritage Meats USA. Actually, Emily Pearson, she just had a baby, which is awesome. And Patrick Martin, who's the owner of this company, they've had this thing now, I think, must be for 15 years. Must be. Maybe it's less. This thing called Goat-tober, where every October they celebrate the goat. And there's a tremendous amount of goats being raised in the area, and there's a lot of goat out there to be had. And it really is incredible. We're really one nation that doesn't eat a lot of goat. Like, it's not in our diet, but it's incredible. I think we should.
Yeah. And they're incredibly cute, and especially when they're baby goats. Man, those things are so cute and so mischievous.
It was a hell of a segue. You know, they are delicious. And also... pretty cute.
I don't know how many places I went in Nepal that you would see goats and chickens stacked up on top of a bus, yeah, or in a seat next to you.
Yeah,
it was that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, there was we were talking. I just had a thought and it just disappeared out of my mind. It's because probably because I was so shocked by the fact that we were talking about eating these animals, and you were like, actually, they're pretty cute also, and that's not stopping me from eating them. That's actually a selling point. It's like, this is delicious, Aaron. Where'd you get this? Oh, this is some goat we got locally. Tell me, was it cute? Sure was.
Cute as a button.
Cute as a button, man. Oh, my goodness. A little ray of sunshine. Goes down good.
We apologize if that's offensive to you.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, I mean, quite candidly, we're being a little... So there's a little bit of sarcasm.
Yeah.
Just for the folks at home.
But
also, Gabe, I would be just as kind of intrigued and slightly bothered by your inquiry of how cute this food was before I ate it. I think this is a massive point for people who choose not to eat meat for humane reasons.
That's true.
Cuteness is a factor, but you're not you.
No.
Not you at all. In fact, you're the opposite. You're like, I need this to be like on the cute meter. Like, whoa, 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 whoa. This is...
I'm undiscerning.
Yeah. Cuteness is really attractive for you in many ways. Yeah.
I heard a comedian talking about chickens this week, and he said that he didn't want to eat free-range chicken because they had dreams and hopes. he didn't want to eat a chicken that was that had freedom.
Had been given the chance to dream.
He wanted to eat one that was just ready to die. And
okay.
Anyways.
We're going to change topics here, guys. Yep, that's great.
Four people just turned us off, but not my mother.
Nope. Okay, well, for the rest of the folks who are not going to try to shut us off, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
Yeah?
It's been an interesting week.
Yeah, you got your second shot this week?
Second shot, fully vaccinated.
Yeet!
Yeah.
Awesome, man.
Whatever, I didn't get sick, so that's good.
Yeah.
And I had a day off, so, I mean...
Amazing.
I'll take it.
Is there anything better than a forced sick day?
Especially when there's a little snow on the ground, especially in the morning. It was good. I took a nap.
Whoa. Now you're talking.
I live for naps now.
Me too, man. I think I was really against the idea of the siesta. Like, that was a big, massive part of my, like, when I was growing up in the kitchen, and we'd talk about we'd meet other chefs from other countries or whatever, and they'd, you know, you'd go visit some other country, and they'd, like, shut down at, like, 4 o'clock. It's like, what is going on here, man? That's not necessarily true for chefs, but like the idea of like the siesta in the middle of the afternoon, like a 3 or 4 o'clock nap. Yeah. Like, don't fight it, man. Like, take an hour nap and be productive for the rest of the afternoon and the evening.
Yeah.
I'm a big, big proponent of naps. I love to nap.
My biggest thing with naps is the fact that I'm sort of sleeping my life away. So, sometimes I'm looking at it like, what could I be doing with this time instead of sleeping? And then my body says, nah, sleep.
Mr. and Mrs. Bissau, that's all on you, but it's all on you guys. Yeah, this man is a productive, hardworking, determined individual. He's also an older gentleman now.
I'm old.
He's shifting into the next the next gear of life.
I haven't picked out my white New Balance yet, but there's a guy at work that wears them all the time, and he's not even a dad.
No cred.
No cred. No green.
Full poser, man.
Yeah. There's no green grass clippings on his shoes.
Oh, my God.
I will never own a pair of white shoes.
Don't say never say never.
I should never say never. But
yeah, I'm sure there's a pair of patent leather spats with your name on it that's going to go in your next, you know, with there's got to be a pair of white patent leather Doc Martens that's got your name on it somewhere.
Well, there's already a pair of wingtips in my closet, but they're all white.
You're halfway there, dude.
I don't like God shoes. I call them God shoes because they're all white.
Oh, cool. You have to explain that. Let's explain.
Because if God had shoes, you know, because he's
angelic.
He's angelic. Yeah. He would wear all white shoes. So that's where the God shoes came
from. You don't think we're going for like for sort of like Birkenstocks? He'd be sort of in the leather slippers kind of thing.
Not in heaven.
Now that he's in heaven, he's got like a full team behind him as well too, and they've all got matching outfits. Yeah. And it's like, guys, listen. I know I was doing sandals when I was on Earth, but now. We need white patent leather outfits, okay? I need leather pants that match my shoes, okay?
That's right.
Yep, I need like a sparkly tie, you know? And I need 3 of you guys on mics behind me, and we're going to be doing spins, and I'm going to be sliding out and singing, and I'm going to be sliding back. Yeah.
Flossing. Oh, so we haven't offended one section. We've offended the others.
I think we're offending anybody, man.
Oh, whatever.
So talk to me about...
It's 5:30.
It is. It's 5:30 for drive time. It's funny, man. I for those listening for the first time, Gabe and I started this thing. We've been talking about this for a while, but we couldn't find a time during the week when both of us had a solid hour of undisturbed time. And so, like a total sadist, I was like, how about morning? And Gabe's like, yeah, that's fine. Morning's good. And then we somehow agreed on 5 a.m. on Saturdays. Oh, dude, look at that.
Heating up.
Yeah, we somehow agreed on this time, and normally it's not a problem. I'm usually here either right at 5 or slightly before it, but like today, I needed an extra 30 minutes to get my proverbial shit together, and man.
We're just glad we're doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's interesting, you know, I think I've been thinking about sort of topic selection and how we're moving forward with this thing, and I like that we are coming into this without... I mean, Gabe and I, we chat via text, but we don't see each other much during the week. Gabe, you're pretty busy Monday through Friday, and I'm pretty busy, you know, Thursday through Monday. So us meeting on Saturday mornings is like, it's great because we're not only catching up, but we're also getting to sort of unwind for mm-hmm. both of us, you know? And it's nice for me to break up my weekend with something that's like relaxing and for me. It's like these podcasts are just a great time to sit and talk. Normally at work, I'm being pulled in many directions or I've got a long laundry list of things I need to get done. And I'm sort of at the beck and call at whatever needs to happen within my emergent life. But, that went off. But now I like that we're sort of doing this, man. I like the morning time. Morning time is great for me.
Yeah, so this is episode 7.
What? No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Oh, man.
I did do a numerical count in my head.
Whoa.
Yeah, I can count up to 7.
You heard it here first, guys.
I skipped 4.
Oh, my God. that. So tell me, dude, you know, you had mentioned something about bands. And like, you were in a band and I was in a band. I was in a couple bands. I would call them, one band I played with, we actually played a couple shows. The other ones we just sat around while me and the other guitarist tuned our instruments and then tried to play some Tool covers or play my buddy Ian's music, which was a lot. He was a much more talented musician than we were. I'm sure he's off doing something wild right now, but yeah, what was your sort of like garage band experience?
So I've been in a couple bands. And again, when I say bands, these are not anything major to the area or whatever, but we had a lot of fun. Once it was in a band called Captain Carl.
Captain Carl.
That was the first real band I was ever in.
How'd you get that name?
Captain Carl from Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Oh my God.
So the first year of marriage in 2000, I guess.
Wait, you were an adult when you were in this band.
Yeah, I was. Well, I don't know if you want to call me an adult, but I was married.
I would qualify that as adult.
So it was me and some friends from Messina, New York, and we didn't ever play any shows, but we actually had some. I think we had 5 songs. One about a chicken mobile and one about monkeys and that fling their poop. And it was, we never played a show because we broke up and that's
some highbrow serious shit right there. Yeah.
The things that you can write songs about that are ridiculous and silly, but still
you just sort of waited, you know, you just waited until Amber was your wife to start doing this stuff. You're like, listen, I've been holding this in for a while. Now that we're together, I'm not going to stop. Like, you're going to get to know the real weird me.
Yeah. No, I think she pretty much knew that I loved monkeys and I thought poop was hilarious. So that was no surprise.
And she still said, she still said I do.
Here I sit 22 years later and she still just rolls her eyes and goes, yep, that's him.
Full on lady killer over here, guys.
The sad thing is, I shouldn't say the sad thing. My children definitely have many aspects of my sense of humor and taste, and it's popping up a lot lately. And she just looks at me and she goes, "Those are your kids," and I just have to go,
"Sure are."
Yeah. All right.
Oh yeah. Here's a fart noise.
She's straight as an arrow. I am as wacky as a $4 bill.
Captain Carl.
Yeah, Captain Carl.
So who were the guys in the band?
Oh, geez. So Brad
Paul was Rubens on
drums. Yes. Boy, now I'm totally Brad. Chad on guitar.
You're joking.
No, it was Brad, Chad. We had another gentleman that I do not remember his name. And then one gentleman named Jeremy. He actually is a successful metal artist now. Plays in a band out of New York City. Very power metal. I think the band Sanhedrin, which is whatever. These guys look amazing and they play.
Have you seen them play?
I haven't seen them play live, but I've seen the videos. And yeah, from what Captain Carl was to what Sanhedrin is night and day. And he's a professional musician, and we were goofballs in a garage.
Hey, dude, you're still a part of the trivia. You know? Like,
it's true.
When I go to that bar in 5-10 years and they're like, what was the first band from the lead singer of Sanhedrin?
Like, he was in many other bands prior to, but that was my connection to him. Prior to Captain Carl.
Wow, then you guys really lucked out. You know, I didn't realize Captain Carl could pull that kind of talent.
Well, I mean, not so many people can write a song about a chicken mobile.
Well, it's not what you know, right? It's who you know.
That's right.
You guys managed to grab Sanhedrin level musicians. That's pretty incredible.
Shout out to all those guys. We never did get to play a show.
Yeah, I played with, I think my first like group of musicians I ever hung out was two guys, Joe and Matt. Joe Caligiuro and Matt Melly. Joe was a drummer, and Matt, I don't know, did Matt play bass? We all skateboarded together. And Joe had learned, like, I think the entirety of Kerplunk, Green Day album, and could play that fast, and we were just like, you are amazing. And then I think it was Matt, I don't know, Matt's now a record producer in Austin, Texas. He's got his own studio. I forget the name of his studio. We connected on Facebook a while back, but he still looks the same. I think he still skates.
Nice.
But Joe and I were friends, and we had another friend named Ian Mast, who was an incredible musician. I don't know what Ian's doing now, but he was really into Tool. That was his big, like, he kind of introduced us all to metal. Introduced me to metal, at least. I was kind of like, I grew up in a house, like I walked in this morning, and the last song that was in my head was Lullaby of Birdland by Mel Torme. The stuff I grew up with was like Frank Sinatra, Mel Torme, Luciano Pavarotti, you know, a lot of Bossa Nova, a lot of Peter Allen, a lot of Paul Simon, a lot of like the Carpenters. This is the music that I grew up with as a kid. Paul Simon, James Taylor, you know, like pretty standard Sleeve of Saltines, white New England music.
Adult contemporary.
Yeah. Listen to the wave, the sounds of the ocean on the wave, 101.9. And getting all this smooth, sort of like just nothing, blah, no depth. And I think I had a good friend that my sister was really good friends with who sort of introduced me to like Guns N' Roses and Pearl Jam, like when they first were coming out. I guess Guns N' Roses was on the scene in 83, 84, maybe. I don't know if those dates are right.
I think that's about right.
And so I was sort of, I think I first came to know them in the late 80s after Appetite for Destruction had come out. So, but you know, like the Metallica Black album, I was shown Master of Puppets, and then and Justice for All, and then Megadeth, and then, I was interested in playing guitar, so that was, my dad had given me a guitar when I was a kid, and I just started learning to play. I took some lessons, I think a little later, but I like started to learn to play Sweet Home Alabama, or, you know, like...
Turn it up.
Yeah, yeah. Just learning some chords, and, you know, just playing a single string, and then when I got a little bit older, like, I learned to play... I had a book of power chords, and I'd put on the Green Day albums, and I would just hang that strap low and sit front of my mirror and put on the headphones plugged into my amp and just play as loud as I could and scream into the mirror. This is pretty cool. And then I think I bought my... I wanted to buy a guitar. And so my dad was like, you need to get a job to pay for it. So I got a paper route. And I ended up buying this Fender Strat Plus Deluxe, man, in like maroon sparkle. I mean, Wayne's World had come out, and so I was like,
that's the guitar I want.
Yeah, pretty much. It was incredible. And so then I took some lessons from Fraley Music. Now, I think now it's Greenwich Music. Took some lessons. I was like, I walked in there. I don't know if you've ever taken music lessons, but there's like a joke, I'm sure, in guitar teachers who are like, kid comes in, is like, I want to learn to play the solo from, you know, like Peter Frampton's, you know, Do You Feel Like We Do? And they're like, okay, but like, we're going to learn a C chord first. Okay?
Let's start with these five.
Yeah, these five chords, you know, so like, I didn't have patience for it. In fact, I had very little patience for any of that stuff. I used to make, like, I was the kind of kid, like, I like to make models, but I just wanted to get the plane put together or the car put together. I wouldn't paint it or like put the decals on. I was like, yeah, okay, great. It's a plane. I got it. Yeah. Also, the glue was had its, you know, smelling that like orange scented modeling glue. Man, those were the days. What are you doing, kid? I'm just up in the attic, Dad, in the poorly ventilated space, just putting models together with some highly toxic glue. Okay, cool.
I don't have any plastic bags or paper bags, so
yeah, just stay up there. Go. Yeah, we're fine. Yeah, we're fine. Hmm. And so I think we were in that band with Ian and Joe, but I wasn't very serious about it. I think I made a poster for our band. I think we came up with a name, if I remember correctly. I believe it was Rusty Needle.
Very dark, very...
Oh, yeah. It was just like, find something really depressing about life. I mean, I didn't feel any depression about being a kid living in Greenwich, Connecticut. I didn't have anything to be angsty about, truly, other than...
being a teenager.
I mean, not even. Like, my parents really didn't care in the sense that they were like, yeah, okay, kid, you know, like, what are you doing? And you're into music? Okay, cool. I try to play songs for my dad, and he would be like, play the whole song. And I'd be like, no, I'm just going to play these first three chords. Like, you know the rest of the song. I'm not going to learn the entire song. Like, I'm just going to learn the first five or six chords. You get it. You hear, you know that that's Sweet Home Alabama. You're welcome. Yeah, now that song will play in your head for the rest of the day. I don't need to do the whole 3.5 minutes, dude. You know, take it easy. But when I was in high school, I played with, I had another couple guys that I played with, and Austin Work and Matt Hazlett. And Matt was a great guitar player and a great singer. And Austin is an incredible drummer. I mean, really, no joke, killer drummer, and a huge Pearl Jam fan. So we'd go to the basement of the church, the school we were at. I went to boarding school. And so we'd be in the basement, and we would just turn it up to 11, man. It was awesome. It was really great. We were the Candidates. That was our band name. I thought that was a good band name. But I usually either played bass or rhythm guitar, and Matt would play and sing. And, man, we had fun. We played one show, I think, for Spring Fling our senior year in front of, I don't know, 10 people. It was a little bit nerve-wracking, and it was a lot of, like, looking back at Austin and looking across at Matt and then looking back at Austin and being like, I don't know, let's here we go. Like, does that sound good to you? Are you tuned? Am I tuned? Are you tuned? Are you tuned? Am I tuned? You know, just anything to avoid playing. And now, I guess I was 17, and so now that was 22 years ago. I play a lot of music now. Like, I play guitar every day. If not for 30 minutes, then for an hour. And I'm just playing. I now have two guitars, one of which is on loan from our buddy Jason, which is a sort of it's a National. It's like this sort of resonator. It's got this really awesome, it's like a metal body guitar. It's got this really cool steel sound. I got a ukulele that my buddy Eric bought me, and then I got a bass that my friend Ben lent me. And I'm just playing.
Nice.
Like, it's awesome. And, you know, like, going through Alex and our separation, I don't think I ever wrote songs. I think I had a couple songs that I wrote in high school. I was telling you about that, like, that radio show that we did to correct myself. OJ started the radio station. I just was able to be a DJ with him. He was the one who was really like, he's the one who knew how to do that. I was just like, cool, radio station, awesome. Can I join in? But when we worked on, during that time, I think I wrote a couple of songs. No lyrics, didn't have anything to say, but wrote some like music. And Matt wrote a couple songs, which I still play in like regular rotation of things I know how to play. But since, I guess it's been 2019 is when Alex and I started, like, when I moved out of the house. And I think I must have written 50 songs. You know? I listened to a lot of John Prine. I listened to, like, a lot of country and western that I grew up with, like, a lot of George Jones and Waylon Jennings and, like, a little bit of sad country, you know? Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash, but I wrote a lot of music, and it's one of those things. It's like snowboarding for me, which is that something that I really enjoyed. It was a part of my life, and then just for some reason, it stopped being a part of my life. And then something happens, you get reacquainted with it, and then all of a sudden, it's like, oh yeah, this is totally amazing. I love doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any sort of like visions of being a rock star. You know, that's not something I want to do, but I do love to play music, and I love to play with my friends. In fact, I'm surrounded by a lot of grown men who play music, which is awesome. Like, I've jammed with my buddy Ben pre-COVID. Wednesdays were Whalen Wednesdays, man. I go over to his place, and we just play for an hour or two at night. Like, his wife would come down, we'd sing some songs, we'd play some of our own stuff. He's a great songwriter. He's a really great musician. Or I'd go up to Jason's cabin when he's here on the weekends, which I think he's here tonight. And he used to be a luthier. He used to be a guitar maker. That's how he started his career. I don't know if you know that about Jason. I
did not know that.
Yeah, you want to talk about incredible talent. We should get him on this show.
Absolutely.
Like, he is an amazing individual. He started at a guitar making school, I want to say in the Midwest. Grew up in Pennsylvania. By the way, like, a relatively scrawny kid. Jason, for those who don't know who we're talking about.
He's not anymore.
He is not a scrawny person. To describe him as scrawny would be sort of, it would be incredibly sarcastic.
If that was scrawny, I'd hate to see what Mammoth Man looks like.
Yeah, he's like an extra from like a...
the Vikings.
Yeah, like the Vikings or like some sort of Conan spinoff. But Jason started as guitar maker and then worked with classical instruments as well too, and became, I think, a pretty well-known violin. I don't know what maybe it's a luthier for violins as well too, but he would go around and help fix or repair or refurbish old violins for musicians around the world. I think he spent a lot of time going back and forth to China. And for those who don't know Jason as well, too, he's incredibly detail-oriented and very focused on all of the technical details involved in whatever he's doing. So Jason rides motorcycles. He knows all about motorcycles. He just dives full in. And at some point, he wanted to start... I think it was when he and Stephanie, his wife, bought that house and wanted out in Gardner and then wanted to make it their own. And he just started building stuff and taught himself to weld. And now that's his business, you know,
it's Blue Barn Builds.
Blue Barn Builds, yeah. And it's design and fabrication of custom work. He's done a lot of work at AOK. He built our awning. He built our smokers.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you Google his work, he's done a ton of incredible, beautiful stuff. And he's working on an outdoor line of products as well, too, which is really cool.
Is that the Tornado?
The UFO.
The UFO, yes.
Yeah. And, like, Jason is he's an incredible guitar player. And it's pretty awesome to be able to have, like, I mean, I don't want to say, like, I feel self-conscious, but, like, he's a grown-up dude. He's pretty macho, but also, like, loves to be singing Hank Williams songs and Tom Petty tunes, you know? Or, like, Brian, our buddy Brian, who has been singing to his kids every night for the past 15 years. And not lullabies and Rafi songs. Shout out to Rafi. he's been singing, like, you know, Radiohead and Pixies and Flaming Lips and Beatles and, like, Arcade Fire and, like, all the contemporary music and the stuff that he likes to those kids. So now they're well-equipped with, like, real... I don't know, musical tastes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful thing. First time I went over to Brian's house, he's like, do you play guitar? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, come on upstairs, sing the kids to sleep. That's awesome, man. And it's like one of those things is like, yeah, I'm surrounded by people who love to play music, you know? And honestly, to be here at Mass Mocha, there's a tremendous, like to be here in North Adams, there's a tremendous group of individuals who are here who play music on a really serious level. And you get to interact with them and see them really close up. Eric Kearns, who I also think we need to get on this podcast, just because he's an incredibly interesting individual and like an incredibly dear friend of mine. I'm like super honored to know that guy. But, you know, he started this program at Tourists with John, one of the partners at the motel here, this Sing for Your Slumber program, which if you're not familiar with it, they have a network of musicians that they're connected with. And they say to them, hey, if you're in the area, either coming through on tour or have a night off, we'll put you up, but you got to play a set.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I mean, some of the most special live music experiences in my life have been sitting in a room the size of this living room and being as far away from the musician as I am from you, which is...
It's four and a half feet away. Technically, yeah. Not COVID. Whatever.
Whatever.
We're both vaccinated.
Yep. But like, the intensity of those moments are, they're so special. Like Becca Mancari being in, like listening to her, Clem Snide was amazing. And this group of band, this guy's from Nashville, the Cordovas. I mean, the Westerlies. Eric has an incredible knack for finding amazing musicians. Caroline Rose, I think, played a set. I mean, I don't know. I didn't know much about these musicians before Eric. And truth be told, he's given me a lot of information about music in the past 5 years. But, dude, to be that close to live musicians is like, that's it. Like, it's like being at a sound check,
mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh man. So there's a guy, this is guy, Mark Stewart. I don't know if you know Mark. He played guitar with Paul Simon for like 25 years. He's just a dude here in town. He's a composer and a contemporary musician as well too. And he is he's a musical instrument designer as well. And he is part of the Bang on a Can sort of founding group, and he did a live musical trivia where he would play songs. And I gotta tell you something, he played the intro to Me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Just that riff, like legitimately as it's meant to be played live on an acoustic guitar. It was a 2 second blip, but it was one of the greatest moments of my life. It was like seeing, I don't know, man, it was like seeing Mickey Mantle hit a home run. It was just like, really, I hate baseball. I don't know why I use the baseball analogy, but like, it was incredible. You know, like I think when I started those, when I was in those bands, for me, it was about like, I just wanted to be in front of a big amp and just play loudly. It wasn't even about like the music. It was just like, I want to play with other people loudly. But my problem in bands was that I'd be with three or four other people. Like I was in jazz band as a kid and we'd start playing, you know, Take the A Train, and I'd be playing, and then I'd be listening to everyone else playing around me, and I'm like, oh my god, guys, we're playing, it sounds so good. And then the teacher would be like, Aaron, focus
on cue.
Yeah, I mean, not quite my tempo. I mean, it's just like really, I just love being around people who can express themselves in that way, and it's awesome to be a part of this kind of community that has such a rich musical history right now with it. I mean, say what, if you're into Wilco, you're not into Wilco. The fact that they did what they did for the last Solid Sound I'm going on a diatribe here, but they did this thing where it was like live Wilco sing-along, where before the show, for those of you who don't know, the music band Wilco and the City of North Adams and Mass Mocha, every other year they put on a show called Solid Sound. And they get a bunch of their, these great musical acts to come together and have a 2-day music fest. Or 2.5-day music fest.
Mm.
It's really special. And they've made a documentary about it called Every Other Year. And it's just, it's really cool. It shows the uniqueness of this community. But, like, they did this thing where you, like, leading up to it, you could submit to sing a Wilco song karaoke style with the lyrics on a big screen behind you for everyone else to sing along with you, and Wilco would be your backup band. It was really cool.
I bet, yeah. That was a very special experience for a lot of people.
It was for Eric's daughter, Darlie, who's an incredibly talented musician and singer, and she got to sing on stage in front of, I don't know, 7,000 people? Like, it's a really special community, man. Like, that doesn't get... You don't get to have that happen. And it's not because Eric is connected. It's because they were blind audition tapes. The idea was that, like, the whole band is listening to these tapes and they're deciding what they want to do. It's pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. But I'm sorry. I was going to ask you, like, when you were doing... when you were joining these bands... Captain Carl, for example, how did the idea come together? How did you convince these dudes, or how did these guys convince you, or how did the idea form to be in this band?
Well, so much of being in a band is having something in common, mm-hmm. whether it's the music or whether it's proximity. You're sitting next to me, you play drums, I play guitar. And so let's just do something. Or
famous words. We should jam sometime, dude.
We should just jam in my mom's basement. But for me, so I was in Captain Carl, and then my wife graduated from college and we moved back home, and I had friends who were into punk rock, and so I was like, hey, let's start a band. And so that was the start to the band called Thanks for Trying, with an X at the end of the thanks.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And so that was my pinnacle of musical success and whatever. But big shout out to Ian and Aaron and Toby. We played in that band for almost 4 years, 3.5, 4 years, something like that.
No way.
Which was, it was just a lot of fun. You know, we played in Canada. Ooh.
International
tour. I know. We crossed a border. But that was a lot of fun. We had a good time. We practiced in my friend Toby's garage in a little town called Rodman, New York. And these kids would come around, and they were all like the cool kids with the BMX bikes, and they'd always like be out in the street because they could hear us playing, and they'd be like, you guys suck. So what was the first thing we did? We wrote a song about them. First song we ever wrote was called Rodman Biker Punks. And
what kind of music was it?
It was just poppy punk rock, kind of, yeah. It was a lot of fun. It was just three chords and, you know, that kind of Green Day sort of whatever you want to call it, punk rock. So, awesome. So yeah, that Rodman Biker Punks was our instant hit to all those kids, because they'd stop saying, yeah, you guys suck. And they're like, yeah, play that song again.
Yeah.
And then they'd be doing wheelies and stuff.
For those of you listening at home, we are about to play Thanks for Trying's great single version of Rodman Biker Punks.
No, nobody needs to hear that.
It on tape.
There's a CD, a handmade CD that we put out. That was,
we'll put that online.
I wish that we had gotten to record one more time, like, instead of after we'd been together for I don't know, a month and a half and recorded on this four track, because the songs that we wrote actually were pretty meaningful to me. Again, that's pretty much the end of my songwriting. but it was a lot of fun. We had some good times, had a lot of local bands that we played with that were fun to hang out with after, and just we got to know a lot of people through that. And most of the guys from that band went on to play in other hardcore bands and metal bands. And I was the only one that ever went on and was like, all right, well, I'm going to be a DJ because I don't play as well as you do. And so I'm just going to bring the music to myself. So that's part of the reason why I spend so much music, is because I want to be a part of the music scene, but I'm just not as gifted as other people.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to Eric about this too, and he was saying Eric has this philosophy about pro ball, you know, and it's like, if you're going to do something, you know, immerse yourself in it and commit yourself to the professional sort of attainment of, to the best of your ability, right? And in some cases, I think that, you know, there's no harm in, it doesn't necessarily mean that, like, don't pick up a guitar unless you're going to be Eddie Van Halen. That's not what he's saying. But if you're going to perform music live, like, take your job seriously. Like, if you're going to be a performer, you're going to be a musician who wants to play live, then don't make it a nonchalant experience, you know, like, for the respect of being on stage and all the effort that goes into organizing event and getting people in the door, like bring it, like, come correct, you know? Mm-hmm. And I realize at first I thought that was kind of a strange sort of approach to, or a strange philosophy for myself. Cause I was like, man, if somebody asked me to play on stage with them, I'd be like, yeah, totally. But it's like, you know what? No. Like, that's not where the enjoyment is for me. The enjoyment is not that I have to get out there and share these songs with the world. In fact, I really don't. But I do enjoy the fact that I get to play music with my friends, which really is the fundamental point of doing this, which is like, sometimes we suck, sometimes we're out of tune. Like, we don't have to worry if we're going to decide to play this weird Counting Crows song, or, you know, we're going to play this Bruce Springsteen cover. We're going to play the backside of Exile on Main Street and learn all these songs. It's just fun to have someone to play with who's also doesn't care. Mm-hmm. Like, no one's trying to be famous, man. Everybody's just trying to have a good time. And I think that that's a powerful thing, is like, to have a creative outlet with your friends is something that I'm really supportive of, you know? And I like to have those kinds of things. I think it's important. And I'm glad that I was in those bands, but now as an adult, I have fewer fucks to give, so to speak. So, I'm not nervous about singing in front of my friends. I don't feel weird about, you know, trying to hit some high notes if I'm trying to hit some high notes, but also because I'm not being judged and I'm not performing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not that I even know what it is to perform. Like, I have a friend, do you know Melanie Glenn from upstate? She's local woman here. She's an incredible talent. Like, she sings, man. I mean, like, goosebumps. Like, just, she's got a voice and it's beautiful. You hear someone like that who's like written music and has toured, it's like, that is a professional musician, you know? Like, whether or not she wants to continue doing it for the rest of her life, that's up to her. But man, when she sings and she's like putting her heart behind it, yeah, like, I can't do that, you know? Like, not only do I not have the ability to do it, I don't want to do that. I want to watch people mm-hmm. who do that music, you know, like, I want to be in the audience. Cause if I was on stage with them in this weird hypothetical fantasy, I would like have my guitar and my hand would just be hanging over my shoulder and my hands would be on my hips. And I would just be looking at them being like, good for you. You go get it. Because I'm so enamored by people who have that talent, man. like, it's awesome to be able to go on stage and really deliver it, man. God, I mean, it's an incredible thing to be a part of, you know? I think we talked about this when we talked about live music, which is like, what is so incredible about live music is when you see somebody who's a real performer and they're like a show person and they can just bring it. That's exciting.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of that kind of part of the experience. Not that I was ever a great front man or a great guitar player, but I love being able to just go for it. And I mean, I think now when I do pick up my guitar, it's so much less than a performance for myself, but it is a freeing kind of just getting it out.
Totally.
And just noodling around on a guitar, sitting around a campfire or whatever. I could do that for a long time just because it's fun. It's soothing.
Totally.
There's no pressure. There's totally. No anything. And I don't feel like I have any pressure when I was in a band, but it was a lot of fun. I always used to tell the same stupid joke at every show. So for 4 years, I told the same joke.
Are you going to tell it now?
Oh, yeah. what's green and has four wheels? Grasshopper. I lied about the wheels. Anyways.
Oh, Gabe.
That's how I would start a set. Anyway.
Are you ready to rock?
On that knock, note, knock. Don't knock, take knock. Us seriously ever. But I go back and I like picking up a guitar and just noodling around.
Yeah.
There's just something about it that's so freeing, and so you're creating something in a space, and it could be just for you. It could be for the people sitting around next to you. I don't know what episode it was, but you're talking about you were the guitar guy, in school, and you just like to play guitar.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's all we need is just a guitar and noodling around.
Yeah, but it's great to be surrounded by other people who also share that sort of light passion for it, in the sense that it's like, it's just sitting around a campfire playing guitar,
mm-hmm.
you know? And now the more people I know, you know, is sort of, as I see more friends around here, we make more friends. Everyone's got a guitar in their house, and everyone's willing to, I mean, at least in this community, the people that I've met anybody who isn't willing to sing along to a couple of songs. Whether it be like, you know, whether it be like a Tom Petty tune, or like, you know, some Pixies or some Paul Westerberg, you know, like, yeah, whatever, man. Like, it's fun. It's fun to sing along,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we're all grown-ups, man. Like, there's nothing to be embarrassed about, you know? Like,
we've gotten past that point where it's being cool is really the drive to push you forward.
Yeah, it's like if those Rodman biker punks came by, we'd just be like,
oh,
yeah, we know we suck, dude.
We know we suck. We're playing on like $100 instruments, but it's okay
because
we were having fun.
Yeah, we were having fun.
No, those were good times.
Good times. Good times.
Good times.
Yeah,
and there are a couple songs that I wrote at that moment that point that were are still kind of dear to my heart. Just sort of. Those were my ways of getting my emotions out. I wrote a song called Broken Homes, and it was still me trying to decipher through my parents' divorce and all of that, and sort of being married myself and sort of what that meant. And there was a lot of emotion in that I think back on it now, and it still rings true.
Yeah. It's a powerful tool to have at your disposal, you know? It's the same for painting or drawing or, you know, I don't know, what making dream catchers. whatever your creative outlet can be, to sort of be able to express that, I think it's good. I'd love to see a dream catcher that highlights your struggle with your parents' divorce. That'd be hilarious.
That would be a very interesting one. Yep. There's a string down the middle, and it's separated by two sides.
Wow. Oh man, you actually really just came through on that. Oh boy.
Oh, anyways.
That'll be the next session. Yeah. What are we doing? How are we doing on time, man?
Oh, we're right there. We're just about the hour.
What do you got queued up?
Something that has nothing to do with anything we've talked about today. What a great tune. Yeah.
I love it. This was put out by Decca. And I have to tell you that from like an artistic standpoint, I love Decca's logo evolution. It's really incredible.
With the rainbow sleeve and just, yeah.
So good, man.
So anyways, thank you for listening to us ramble on about our stuff on episode number 7 of the Racks and Stacks podcast.
Amazing.
I'm Gabe Bisaw.
I'm Aaron Oster. Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah, and we'll see you. This is Len Berry. 1, 2, 3. It's easy.